Welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Hockey Podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Scott Cullen. You have seen my work in The Athletic and McKean's Hockey and at TSN.ca for many years. And now you can see it on TorontoHockey.com, where I've taken on the role of beat writer for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm really looking forward to that, but you'll be able to see lots of content there as well. Now, I'm going to continue doing the off-season reports. I know we've actually started the National Hockey League season, but I still have a few teams to go. It's kind of been a little bit busy getting things ready on another job front recently. So we've still got the Bruins. I have the Coyotes and Ducks to finish out the league, but Bruins, we can still get to them before they drop the puck. And let's take a look at a team that I think is going to be a contender again, probably. They still have a core, even though that core is getting a little bit older. It's still, they have some of the very best players in the league, and you always like to bet on talent like that. So when we get started, we will look at the forwards, defense, and goaltending for the Boston Bruins. So let's start things out on the top line of the Bruins, and it's one of the very best in the league. I mean, you go by the nickname the Perfection Line, you might expect them to be pretty good. On the left side, we have Brad Marchand, who, as much as people outside of Boston will get riled up about Marchand's antics, one, I think he's kind of started to tone it down a little bit. I mean, once he stopped licking people, that was a good sign. But it sort of has obscured the fact that Marchand is one of the elite players in the league. I mean, over the past 5 years or so, he's scored at a really high rate. And so, you know, when it comes to fantasy, Marchand being a really great scorer at left wing, a position that does not have a lot of great scorers, he's a viable first round pick. And now, if you're talking about dynasty leagues or something about the long-term future, maybe that it goes down a little bit, because when you're in your 30s, eventually there is going to be some decline. But I think if you're looking straight at this season, there's no reason to think that Brad Marchand won't be one of the most productive players in the league, because that's just who he has established he is. At center is Patrice Bergeron. And, you know, Bergeron is an analytics darling, but what makes it so fantastic is that when the analytics kind of came around and people started realizing defensive impact and started seeing that Patrice Bergeron was consistently outstanding and so much better than his mere point totals would give him credit for, well, then kind of the popular belief on Bergeron started to come around too, is that, oh yes, the mainstream was all in on, oh yes, Patrice Bergeron, future Hall of Famer, and so on. Yes, and all of that's true, but there were some people who were rather late to the party on Patrice Bergeron. And I think what we've established now is that Bergeron, there was a while, I guess, where there was some thought that maybe Bergeron was dragging Marchand around a little bit, but Bergeron has missed enough time with injuries at the stage of his career that we've seen Marchand be able to still be productive without him and drive play. And you know, that's the big thing with Bergeron, is that, you know, when he's on the ice, the Bruins are consistently outshooting the other team and outscoring them by a lot. And so Patrice Bergeron, you know, for my mind, first ballot Hall of Famer and still a really great player. The question, I guess, is how much longer he's going to do it for the Bruins. As I said, there have been some injuries in the past few years, and now I don't suspect that this is his final year in the National Hockey League, but you kind of wonder how things have been going with the Bruins. And we'll talk about David Krejci and Tuukka Rask in moments, but they were, you know, those are longtime Bruins who sort of had their end with the franchise happen unceremoniously. Now, I don't think Bergeron necessarily goes unceremoniously, but I also think that you know, he has to see that time is of the essence in his career. Now, on the right side of the top line is David Pastrnak, and he was just such a great addition to this line, because, you know, for a while you had Marchand and Bergeron, and they would roll through a bunch of different guys on right wing, and the line would still be great, because when you have two of the very best, you know, they can drag just about anybody along with them. And In the case of Pasternak, well, now you're adding one of the elite goal scorers in the game, and he just really seems to fit well with Marchand and Bergeron. Now, Pasternak is such a dynamic, game-breaking type scorer. He can fit with a lot of places, and there are times that I wonder whether the Bruins would be better served moving Pasternak to another line to see how that plays. And they occasionally try it, but. I think the results, with Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak are one of the top few lines in hockey. They might be the very best. You can probably, put them in a death match against Landeskog, MacKinnon, and Rantanen in Colorado, and you probably have a pretty good matchup. And then I suppose if McDavid and Draisaitl are playing together in Edmonton and whoever they lump in with them, you can put them in that death match too. But I think, the Bruins wouldn't trade their three for the others. And so Pasternak, I think he really elevates the line because he takes them from being, yes, they're a dominant two-way line and control play, but now you have a real game-breaking scorer who makes the most of their chances. To the second line, which was outstanding down the stretch last season, and there's something to be discussed here about that. But now on the left side, they got Taylor Hall, who they acquired from the Buffalo Sabres, and he was having just an awful season with the Sabres last year. Had like two or three goals at the trade deadline when Boston picked him up, and Hall all of a sudden turned things around. I mean, I don't think Taylor Hall is the player that he was when he won the Hart Trophy as the league MVP with New Jersey Devils a few years back, but he's still a very good player, and especially if you give him legitimate supporting cast, and he certainly fit really well with David Krejci, and now Krejci isn't here in Boston right now, but that was, I guess, a real vote of confidence, I guess, is what you could take from the way he finished last season, is that, you play Taylor Hall with good players, you can get good results, and I think that was a pretty strong takeaway from how last season finished, given how poorly it started for Hall and Buffalo. Now, at center on the second line, we've got Charlie Coyle, and in some ways this feels like Coyle is almost by default, is that the Bruins haven't really found a better option to replace Krejci, and Krejci went back to the Czech Republic to play this season. And he hasn't, I guess, officially retired. It's possible that he isn't going to come back to the National Hockey League. Now, from the sounds of things, reporting is out there that, the Bruins aren't closing the door on a potential return of David Krejci. So I think you have to kind of keep that open as a possibility. But in the meantime, if Charlie Coyle ends up being the second line center, Coyle has had some moments in his career where he's a pretty nice middle six forward. And last season wasn't great for him. And I think one of the tests here for the Bruins is to, if they have such strong wingers on the second line, and their right winger is Craig Smith, who's a really excellent play driving winger as well, who can score a bit. And he really thrived once Taylor Hall arrived in Boston too. The thought could be that Hall and Smith are going to be effective enough driving play that, they can make do with a player at center on that line that isn't necessarily, the most dynamic and the most creative. And at least that was where Krejci, I think, really offered an advantage. I mean, he's not particularly fast and certainly not physical, but very smart, great vision. And sometimes when you're talking about high-end players, and a guy like Taylor Hall would qualify, you need to have somebody who's thinking the game on your level. And I'm pretty sure David Krejci, whether he could keep up physically in terms of the speed or what have you, he was always one or two steps ahead of the game in terms of how he was processing it and making plays. And so I think that's why he was such a great fit. And now I don't necessarily see that Charlie Coyle is that kind of fit, but I would also kind of give this line a bit of run and see what happens, see whether Coyle can kind of get pulled along by Hall and Smith, and maybe they make something work there. Now, on the third line, got Jake DeBrusk, who coming off a very disappointing season. And thing is, DeBrusk had shown enough potential in previous years that I guess Boston wouldn't want to wholly give up on him. it also wouldn't have shocked me had they traded him in the offseason. It would have been trading him at a super low point in his value. But, you know, some that happens with players sometimes, is that they really have an awful season and their team just doesn't want him back. So the Bruins give themselves a chance here to get some bounce back value, because I wouldn't expect DeBrusque to be as awful as he was last season. At center on the third line, we've got Erik Haula, who has really kind of had ups and downs throughout his career. And, you know, he's skilled enough that you can play him in a middle six role, and he can contribute offensively. He can get some time on the power play, and he makes that work in sort of a supporting role. Like, I don't want Erik Haula as your first line anything, whether that's wing or center, but you just, as a guy who can play in your top nine, chip in some goals, Erik Haula can do that. Now, on the right side, we've got Nick Foligno, who's, for the most part, has not been a huge scorer in his career. He had some years with Columbus where he got quite a bit of power play time, and then the numbers went up a bit. For the most part, he's kind of in the 30-ish points range at this stage of his career. And that's, again, totally fine. Put him in your middle six, and Foligno can move around the lineup in terms of left wing, right wing. He can even play some center. And really, the Bruins, what they're looking for with Foligno is kind of a versatile player, but a real, you know, gritty heart and soul type player who will lay it on the line. And, you know, that he has established that he is that kind of player. And so if there ends up being some, you know, changes in the lineup or what have you, you know, you could very easily see a point where Charlie Coyle and Nick Foligno are playing on the same line and going out and kind of wreaking some havoc physically on the other teams. To the fourth line, on the left wing, we've got Trent Frederick, who is sort of he's definitely a checking winger, but he's kind of an up-and-coming, tough guy in some ways. Like, if you're a fighter in the National Hockey League, that might mean five or six fights over a full season. But Trent Frederick is kind of that guy for the Bruins. You know, Tom Wilson is out there causing trouble. Well, Trent Frederick might be the guy who steps in and tries to make him answer for it. And Frederick has done that. And now he doesn't contribute a whole lot offensively. And maybe his game is not quite as complete as you might have hoped when he was drafted. But I think he is carving out sort of a niche with the Bruins. Now, fourth line center, we've got Tomáš Noshek, who really kind of came into his own with Vegas last season and moved up in their lineup a little bit and started to score. And so if you have Noshek on your fourth line, I think you're doing all right. And he showed last season that kind of in at least spurts, he could handle more than that. And so that's kind of what you want out of your fourth line. You don't want guys on your fourth line to just be only fourth liners. Yeah, quote unquote. I don't want to, you know, I'm not disparaging guys who are in the National Hockey League for only being fourth liners. But you want somebody who can move up the lineup if necessary, and not because they have to. Yes, the move might be because of injury or what have you, but you want somebody who moves up and it's a seamless transition. That, you know, if there's a hole at third line center and the Bruins need Noshek to play there for a couple of weeks, well, he might be able to do that. So I think that was a pretty good addition for them in the offseason. On the right side, we've got Carson Kuhlman right now, who's been a prospect, battled some injuries a little bit. And with Kuhlman, what you get is a fairly hard driving winger. He's not huge, but he kind of gets his nose in there and really battles. But he's also got a bit of a touch around the net. Again, this is another guy who, if you play him on your fourth line, that's fine. But he has at times in the past, moved up higher in the Bruins lineup. Like there were times when Krejci and DeBrusque were kind of rotating through a bunch of right wingers, and Kuhlman was one of the guys who would get some opportunities there. So to have players like that on your fourth line, guys who could move up the lineup, you know, that's a better situation for the Bruins. Now, who else could be in the mix? Like Anton Bleed is the extra forward right now on the roster. He has been kind of a fringe NHL AHL player in recent seasons, and I think that's kind of where he still is that I don't expect Anton Bleed to have a huge role with the Bruins, but if they need somebody to fill in, he's there. Now, there are a couple of options in the American Hockey League right now who can fill in. Chris Wagner, who has been a fourth liner for the Bruins recently and other teams before that. Wagner's a kind of hard-nosed checking forward who can skate pretty well, but his game is fairly limited. And he might be one of those guys who is kind of stuck in a fourth line role if that's where he's going to be. Now the Bruins are kind of having to eat something here, is that they signed Wagner to a contract that was a $1.35 million cap hit. And so to put that in the minors, you don't get to bury all of that salary. And so they're really making a conscious decision here to go with Carson Kuhlman in that fourth line right wing spot. And then the other player in the American Hockey League to consider is Jack Studnicka, a center who apparently showed well in training camp this year. And he would have a viable claim, I guess, to play the second line center role between Taylor Hall and Craig Smith. And so kind of keep tabs on that, because I think if the Bruins, if Charlie Coyle doesn't have success there, Studnicka is probably the next one in line to get a chance. And if that doesn't work out, well, then maybe Boston looks to other alternatives, and whether that's bringing back Krejci when he's able to come back, or whether they have to, go outside the organization and find another answer. But Jack Studnicka is going to get some kind of opportunity with the Bruins, I would expect, this season. So overall, when you look at this group of fours for the Bruins, it's a strong group. It's not awesome, amazing, but the fact that you have one of the very best lines in hockey can carry a lot of value, and I think that's kind of where the Bruins are, is that their top line is excellent. Second line, without Krejci, is not quite as dangerous, or maybe not nearly as dangerous, I don't know. And kind of the bottom six, they remodeled it, bringing in new guys, Howlo, Foligno, Nošek. Kuhlman has to count as a new guy because he hasn't been playing regularly for the Bruins. And so there's a lot of a shakeup there. And we'll kind of see how that bottom six plays out. But I think you have to be reasonably confident in this forward group for the Bruins right now. Thanks for making Locked On Fantasy Hockey your first listen every day. Make your second listen, the Locked On Crosscheck podcast with Murray Clark and Andrew Berkshire. They do a great job breaking down the game. I went on with them for a season preview. We had a great time. And so Locked On Crosscheck podcast with Murray Clark and Andrew Berkshire. Make that your second listen. We're back, and better than ever, all eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back for another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, boxing, playoff baseball, hockey, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. Go to BetOnline, where the game starts. To the defense of the Boston Bruins, on the first pair, on the left side, we got Derek Forbert. Comes over from Winnipeg as a free agent, and I don't think Derek Forbert is ideally a first pair defenseman, but you want a big stay-at-home, mind-the-store kind of defenseman. That's kind of what Forbert is. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a great fit on the top pair, but the Bruins may survive it because on the right side, they've got Charlie McAvoy. And McAvoy is one of the very best defenders in the league. And I think the only thing that's really held McAvoy back in terms of Norris Trophy votes is he hasn't put up points. And he may get that opportunity this year. If he's running power play one for the Bruins, there's a chance then for McAvoy to put up the points that would get him into the Norris Trophy discussion. Because really, that's in terms of 5-on-5 defensive play, Charlie McAvoy is right in the top handful of players in the league. So I think you can, and from the sounds of it, the Bruins are kind of on the verge of signing McAvoy to a contract extension. It might even be signed by the time I finish recording this podcast. But he is going to be a long-term fixture on the Bruins. And if you can envision a day when the likes of Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron are moving on from the Bruins, it's going to be somebody like Charlie McAvoy that is kind of front and center in the leadership on this team. To the second pair, on the left side, we got Mike Riley, who in the past couple of seasons has really found his game. He was in Minnesota and kind of hyped coming out of college, and it didn't really work out for him with the Wild, but started to come around in Montreal and in Ottawa. And so Riley, when the Bruins made a pretty savvy addition, grabbing him last year, and he played well and earned a new contract and with the Bruins. And I think that Riley kind of, I mean, it took some time to get here, but I think he has established that he's a good top four puck moving defenseman. And there's one thing about, you know, when you're evaluating players and their futures and you look at grading by age and you see how a player is supposed to decline. Well, you know, a guy like Riley kind of coming around 5 years into his NHL career, that's not the usual course of events. A lot of times players are what they are when they get to the league. Maybe, you know, maybe there's some room for improvement a little bit, but it doesn't usually happen this far into a guy's career. And it has apparently for Mike Riley. And so if Riley is a steady puck mover for the Bruins, that helps. Because on the right side there, we've got Brandon Carlo, who's not, you know, maybe the most nimble skater, but he's a huge, big body who will play the defensive game. And I mean, the issue you worry about with Carlo is he's taken some big hits in the past couple of seasons, and concussions and so on that go with it. And so you hope that Carlo can stay healthy, but you can see a role for him in a team's top four where he's a very reliable stay-at-home type defenseman. Now, this is where I guess you can see the way the Bruins are working their defense pairings, where there's one very, very obvious defensive defenseman and one maybe a little bit more capable as a puck mover. And I don't know that you necessarily want that to be an even balance. But I do think a pairing of Riley and Carlo should be fine in the top four. Maybe not great, but it's fine. And then to the third pair, we've got Matt Grizzlick on the left side. And Grizzlick is small, puck-moving defenseman, a guy who can quarterback the power play sometimes, and a pretty solid player. He's had this kind of nice gradual progression in his career as well. Now, some of that has just been that he played effectively almost right away on the third pair for the Bruins, but then he also earned more responsibility, more playing time. And so to this point, if Grizzlick is on the third pair, and that's sort of the way we've got this right now, he's better than your standard third pair defenseman. So, you know, he doesn't have to be limited to his ice time quite to the degree you might with some other third pair guys. And so on the right side, we've got Connor Clifton. And, you know, the Bruins had a kind of a trio of young defensemen getting their feet wet last season. And Clifton is a decent option as a third pair guy. Right shot, has some edge to his game, but probably not the highest upside either. They also had Jeremy Lauzon, who they lost to Seattle in the expansion draft, and Jakub Zboril. And Zboril is going to be the extra, I guess, to start the season as the seventh defenseman. But when you look at this Bruins lineup, having Jakub Zboril as your seventh defenseman, that's probably a better situation than what they were last season, where they went kind of young on the blue line. And I mean, it was a conscious decision. They let Zdeno Chara go, and they were going to give some young guys a chance to sink or swim. And well, there was some sinking, I think, in that process. So overall, when I look at that defensive group, it's pretty good. I mean, largely because you have really a great guy at the top in Charlie McAvoy. But I do think that, you know, there are some question marks along the way, that Forbert and Carlo and Clifton aren't the guys who really move the puck on their pairings. And so if anything happens to the puck mover on their pairings, well, things start to get a little dicey. You know, if there's an injury to Mike Riley, for example, well, you have to find somebody who can move the puck effectively to play alongside Brandon Carlo. And maybe that's Jakub Zboril. Maybe he slides in there and it works. But I do think there's, you know, maybe a little bit of vulnerability on the Bruins defense, but it's not bad. I wouldn't look at this Bruins defense and think it's disastrous. They also have John Moore in the American Hockey League right now, but I don't imagine Moore is going to have a huge role on this team. Now to the goaltending, we've got Linus Ullmark. The Bruins went and grabbed him as a free agent from Buffalo and made a pretty significant commitment. It was 4 years, $20 million. That's not the kind of thing you're paying somebody to be your backup. And so the Bruins have these expectations that Linus Ullmark can be their starting goaltender. Tuukka Rask is out. He's required surgery. Now his contract expired. And And he's basically said that he only expects, if he's going to continue his career at all, that it'll be with the Bruins. And so that really puts this in a an interesting situation where if Rask, you know, midway through the season is healthy and starting to, you know, work his way back towards playing in the National Hockey League, what does that mean with Linus Ullmark? I mean, maybe the Bruins would be inclined to say, okay, we're going to take Tuukka Rask and bring him back and we'll shop Linus Ullmark around the league. I mean, there are enough teams that could use a goaltender that that maybe they could find a taker for Ullmark. But I think there's a possibility here that Ullmark just plays well enough that the Bruins will press forward with him. And if not, their other option is Jeremy Swayman, who came up at the end of last season and played great for the Bruins. And it would come as no surprise if Swayman ended up with the starting job for the Bruins this year. He played so well in the AHL and then the NHL last season that you have to kind of keep that in mind as a possibility. The Bruins are likely going to give Ullmark an opportunity here. And when you pay a guy 4 years, $20 million, you don't want to just yank it out from under him right away. But if Ullmark struggles, I think Swayman will be knocking at the door to take over in goal. And so ultimately, I think when you go through the defense and goaltending for the Bruins, it's good enough. It's certainly good enough to be a playoff team. Could it be enough to be a championship team? Well, I guess that's kind of to be determined. When we continue, we will look at special teams, prospects, see what else the Bruins might need, and then decide what's up with the 2021-2022 Boston Bruins. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? For example, a Honda Odyssey fuel pump is $353 from a chain store. At Rock Auto, it's $216. That is more money in your pocket. Rock Auto is a family business, serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. Thanks for making the Locked On Fantasy Hockey Podcast your first listen every day. Make your second listen the Locked On NHL Podcast. Sarah Evampato breaks down everything going on in the National Hockey League. Time to look at special teams for the Boston Bruins, and they're pretty good. Over the past three seasons, during 5-on-4 play, the Bruins are 11th in shots per 60. That's 52.6. They are 9th in expected goals per 60, 6.67. They are 3rd in goals per 60 at 8.36. So that's a pretty great power play. 3rd in the league over the past three seasons, and it comes as no surprise. I mean, you're rolling out Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, Grizzlick has been quarterbacking the power play, but it wouldn't surprise me if McAvoy is in there this year. Taylor Hall is going to be in the mix there this year. Krejci was obviously a big part of it, but I think when you have the really high-end personnel that the Bruins have, no surprise that their power play has been great. Now to the penalty kill, and the Bruins are pretty great there too. 4-on-5 player in the past 3 years. Bruins are 6th in shot attempts against per 60, 87. 7th in shots against per 60, 48.9. 4th in expected goals against per 60, 5.61, and 5th in actual goals against per 60, 6.05. So, I mean, I don't know that there's one team that has better special teams results combined than the Bruins. I think there's, if you look at the per 60 numbers, the Bruins are 8.36 goals per 60 on the power play on 5-on-4, then penalty killing 4-on-5, they are 6.05 goals against. That's a 2.31 difference per 60 minutes on special teams, and given that the Bruins tend to be a team that at least holds their own during 5-on-5 play, I mean, there have been times when they've been dominant, but at the very least they come out on the right side of things during 5-on-5, and you mix that in with maybe the best special teams in the league, That's how you end up being a contender every year for a decade. And so what do the Bruins need on this team? Well, the second line center spot, the hole created by David Krejci's departure, that is the, I guess, glaring spot that needs to be addressed. And, you know, maybe Krejci comes back after his season ends in the Czech Republic. Maybe Charlie Coyle makes it work. Maybe Jack Stanika comes in there. But if none of those things happen, well, then the Bruins might have to look elsewhere for a second-line center, because I think what we've seen is that Taylor Hall shouldn't be wasted. Give him at least somebody who can kind of keep up with him in terms of thinking the game and processing the game, and you'll get some better results. Now, what I guess there might be some questions about the goaltending. Again, Tuukka Rask, no idea whether he's inclined to come back. And now a tandem of Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman should be okay. But, you know, I mean, Swayman is still a rookie, and Ullmark is, you know, coming out of Buffalo, where it's hard to evaluate anybody. I mean, as I mentioned about Hall last year, if you were evaluating Taylor Hall on his performance in Buffalo, and a lot of teams seem to do that, based on what the asking price was, then, you know, you would miss the boat, because you would think that Taylor Hall was finished and couldn't play anymore, and then you find out if you're playing with decent players, he can, and so can Linus Ullmark come to a contending team, play meaningful games, and be the number one goaltender? Well, time to find out. But if he can't, then, you know, there's a little bit more pressure in goal. And as I mentioned when we're talking about the defense, I mean, I have some question about somebody like Derek Forbert being on the top pair. Now, maybe he kind of gets, as I said, dragged along by Charlie McAvoy, because McAvoy's great. And I mean, look, the Tampa Bay Lightning have won back-to-back Stanley Cups, and Victor Hedman's partner was Jan Ruda last season. So, you know, you can get by with a great defenseman partnered with somebody who isn't necessarily great. That's, you know, if you're looking at upgrades, I would look at that as a spot of potential improvement. So what kind of prospects have a chance to contribute to the Bruins this season? Well, I think Jeremy Swayman is right at front and center. He played 9 games for Providence in the American Hockey League last year, had a .933 save percentage there. Called up to the Bruins, he had a .945 save percentage in 10 games for Boston. Now, that's unsustainably high, no matter who you are. Even peak Tim Thomas wasn't stopping him at .945 over the long run. But you have to look at that and think that Swayman can, at the very least, be a competent backup this year. He might be able to take the starting job if Ullmark struggles. So Jeremy Swayman should have some kind of impact on the Bruins. And then their center, Jack Stanika, as we mentioned him a couple of times. Stanika had 7 assists in 11 games for Providence last season, only 3 points in 20 games for Boston, but he was kind of playing as a spare part with the Bruins. I think if you're going to reap the rewards with Stanika, you have to say, okay, you're a second-line center, and we're playing you with skilled wingers, and away you go, and see if that works. But as I said, I think there is going to be some chance for Stanika to have an impact with the Bruins this year. It's just apparently not happening right off the start of the year. Then there's defenseman Urho Vakanainen, who is, I mean, I guess in this mix of young defensemen who are battling for a spot on the Bruins' blue line, and he hasn't been able to get there just yet. He only had 3 points in 11 games for Providence, the American Hockey League last year, 2 assists in 9 games for the Bruins. And, you know, I think if he has a really strong season in Providence, that there's maybe a chance for Vakanainen to get back into the mix with Boston, but it's also possible that he ends up in the American Hockey League for the year. Then there's also Jakub Lako, who had played in the Quebec Junior League, but went to the Czech Republic last season, and playing for Energy Karlovy Vary, he had 10 points in 25 games. Nothing terribly exciting there. But then came to the American Hockey League once that league started up, and he put up 19 points in 23 games for Providence. And that kind of, I guess, raises some eyebrows and gets people interested. And I would say it kind of gets Lauko into the mix of guys who could get called up during the season. And so I don't know that I have, you know, huge expectations for him, but I would say put him on the radar that he might have a spot in Boston at some point. What does this mean for the Boston Bruins? Are they a championship contender, playoff team, playoff contender? look, I think the Bruins are most likely a playoff team because, I mean, they've been in contention for a long time. Question is whether they're still legitimate championship contenders. And they might be. But it feels like this version of the Bruins is maybe a little more precarious than it has been over the past decade, when almost on a yearly basis they're among the teams contending for the Cup. And I think I would even say that they're still contending for the Cup right now, but it feels like they could be at a tipping point, right, where an injury to a key player could really send things spiraling out of control, because they're in some ways they're more top heavy than they've ever been. I mean, their top line, as I said, is one of the best in hockey. Their number one defenseman is one of the best in hockey. But if the season went one of those players got injured for a good chunk of the year, and maybe the goaltending didn't pan out the way you hoped, well, then maybe things could turn into a struggle for the Bruins. But if I have to guess, I would peg them for a playoff spot this year, and maybe if things are going well, they still could be in the mix for the Stanley Cup. Thanks for making Locked On Fantasy Hockey your first listen every day. We are going to continue. We've got a couple more, as I said, to finish the off-season reports. We've got the Arizona Coyotes and the Anaheim Ducks. But in the meantime, make your second listen, Locked On Crosscheck Podcast. Mary Clark and Andrew Berkshire, they do a fabulous job. I really enjoyed being on with them in the season preview. So you can check out those podcasts, Locked On Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Check them all out on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts. Stay locked in with Locked On Fantasy Hockey, your daily source for fantasy news and analysis.